Our next speaker is Dr. Lewis Kaplan. He is the section chief of surgical critical care at the Philadelphia VA. He's also a professor of surgery within the Department of Surgery, within the Division of Trauma, Surgical Critical Care, and Emergency Surgery at the University of Pennsylvania. I'd like to welcome Dr. Kaplan.
I can't thank Bryce enough for having me follow Jay. These are my disclosures. None are financial. I do have a couple of others. One is that I will not play the harmonica for you, and I have not been seen in Walmart year of late. We will talk about these four things: compartment syndrome, what this looks like if you were the ventilator, some things that confound the diagnosis of compartment syndrome, and what to do once things are open. We have cases. Your partner is giving you opportunities for clinical excellence, 64, class 4 peritonitis, all of the typical descriptors of septic shock. The fascia is closed. Patted himself on the back. It was wonderful. You can see the fluid resuscitation. The anesthesiologist gave some blood for non-hemorrhaging anemia, but we have oliguria and arrives in the ICU with an endotracheal tube. Your partner also had a consult from the MICU, which looks exactly like this, except this person has severe community-acquired pneumonia. Also typical descriptors of septic shock. On pressors, the usual bundle for antibiotics. Same fluid resuscitation, same packed red blood cells for non-hemorrhaging anemia, and the same anuria. Both of these patients will have intra-abdominal hypertension and will eventually develop the compartment syndrome because there's no place to hide from this. That ACS is compartment syndrome, not the college, if that's what you were thinking. All of these things will lead to the progression from intra-abdominal hypertension to compartment syndrome. You are familiar with them in different circumstances. But when you get there, you open it up and things don't fit well, and so we have to figure out how to manage that. But while you are getting there, you realize that you intended to be there because opening them up makes things better. You are looking at changes in each of these parameters, be it intra-abdominal pressure that is improved heart rate, some invasive measures of hemodynamics, but most importantly, your PF ratio gets better, as does your urine output, a very nicely trackable metric. But this looks like something else we know. You are now looking at mortality rate as a function of time to decompression. The longer you wait, the higher the mortality. This is just like necrotizing soft tissue infection, and there is a window where you should have opened, but maybe you did not. And during that window, you are looking at all of these very common descriptors, from oliguria to a collapsible cave if you're using ultrasound, to lactic acidosis. You are familiar with all these. And so you ask, what has happened with our patient? Well, the abdominal elastance has gone down, and as pressures increase, both hemidiaphragms have been displaced in a cephalad fashion, decreasing the available volume that the lungs can occupy. This looks like what's happening to our patients. We have some data. They are both febrile. They both have a metabolic acidosis as well as hypoxemia on 100% O2. They both have a lactic acidosis, and you want to know the intra-abdominal pressure because this is a talk about compartment syndrome, except you can't. There is no bladder. You didn't think I was going to give you an easy case now, did you? Therefore, what should you do when the typical descriptor for intra-abdominal pressure, bladder pressure, is no longer available? Gastric measurement has occurred, IBC pressures have been taken, none of these have fidelity, and so therefore we will talk about how the ventilator can help you because you need to know what the ventilator sees and how you can use that. Let's talk about those things. But first, while many of the other settings are the same, the volume that you set on the ventilator has different nomenclature. Volume cycled ventilation has tidal volumes. Pressure control has a resultant volume. And APRV or bilevel has a release volume. Each of these will be important because as your pressure rises in your belly, there will be important impacts on each of these. You will be familiar with all six settings for volume cycled ventilation, and you set these routinely. But when pressure rises, what do you really see? Because you don't see a change in your setting. You instead see high peak airway pressures. If they're high enough, because the lung volume that's available for gas is so compressed, you will have that breath be pressure limited. It will terminate before the desired volume has been delivered. When that happens, The passive exhalation in those that are not neuromuscularly blocked may have a much higher expiratory flow rate than they did when there was a much larger volume of lung, because now that thoracic cage is tight. And of course, when you have progressive VQ mismatching, an increase in CO2 and a further decrease in PO2 is absolutely predictable. If you look at the pressure volume curve, and that's what you're seeing here, the normal one is in black. You will note that there is a difference between the black line and the blue line because 200 mLs of gas were added. I submit to you that if 200 mLs of available space were taken away, you would exactly see the same bird's beak profile, which is distension of compliant alveoli, and this is how you initiate ventilator-induced lung injury in this patient population. So specifically look for this. Pressure control has two flavors, fixed eye time or ITE ratio controlled. The rest of the settings are just like volume cycled ventilation. But now, this mode is very sensitive to the decrease in compliance because it needs to deliver less gas to reach its pressure target that's set above PEEP. And as a result, the volume that the machine will generate, the resultant tidal volume, will progressively decrease with the same predictable decreases in CO2, the increase in CO2, decrease in oxygenation, and on chest X-ray, because there's less gas delivered, the lung volumes will also be smaller. If you use APRV or bilevel, these settings are now different. There are still six of them. You don't have to set any fewer, but it reflects the fact that this is a constant pressure variable flow mode. And what you are identifying is that there's a high pressure, there's a time that that high pressure is held, there's a time where the gas flow is turned off, and you can set a low pressure, but you don't have to. Note that there is gas flow coming from the ventilator and coming from the patient all throughout the high pressure phase. As a result of starting your next breath before the patient is completely exhaled, you generate intrinsic PEEP. There is no extrinsic PEEP setting. Note that this gas flow, typical patient, about minus 80 liters per minute. So what do you see with APRV when pressure goes up? You also see decreased compliance. Less gas to reach the same pressure goal, a decrease in your release volume, and the same increase in CO2 and decrease in oxygen. But in those that are not neuromuscularly blocked, remember those exhalations during the high pressure phase? You may have many more of them. These are all very good descriptors, and this is a summary of what the ventilator sees in each of these modes that reflect either less volume or less compliance. But these are not the only things that can give you these same kinds of readings. You have to be careful of what you're looking, because only one of these is the real Samuel Jackson, and he's the chiral enantiomere on the left. Things that can be confusing are basal or atelectasis, very common with low tidal volume ventilation. When it's widespread, the lung behaves as if it is compressed. Of course, space-occupying lesions like gas or blood, if some blood, if some gas, the bone doesn't occupy too much space, but it's certainly a good indication here for chest wall reconstruction. This can also confound it. And if you start here with the transverse thoracotomy, you can see there's ioband. This one actually survived. It may be the only one, but this one survived. You may end up here where nothing fits into the thoracic cage either. But let's assume that you made the correct diagnosis and you've now decompressed. Well, now what? This should impact your ventilator. This is opportunity coupled with absolute peril. It is the best opportunity to recruit that lung and engage in the open lung model. And yet, at the same time, what you have done to compensate beforehand now must be adjusted so that you don't induce lung injury. Very common things, volume cycled ventilation, most of these people are in a lot of PEEP. The ventilator now has a much bigger space. You may have to turn down your PEEP. With pressure control and with APRV, you will now need less pressure to get the same volume. But let's talk for a moment about PEEP. And I want you to think in terms of inspiration and exhalation. This may be some of the PEEP-dependent patients, Jay. Now, you are looking at a model of surfactant deactivation. And the important part is that the upper panels are inspiration, the lower panels are expiration. This is APRV and low tidal volume ventilation. The blue line is normal, and the goal here is to be as close to normal as possible. You're looking at different times for that exhalation. They're progressively smaller. All of them during inspiration look pretty close to control. fairly short times, these two lines look better with regard to control during expiration. Right? This is the period when you can collapse. This is the period when PEEP is helpful. During inspiration, lots of them are fairly close, but higher PEEP, these two, look better. But look at what happens when you have much lower PEEP during exhalation, the period when you have passive exhalation, the period of PEEP dependence. You now are markedly different from control and markedly different from the same places when you had inspiration. So turn that PEEP down slowly in low tidal volume ventilation after you've decompressed. And so I'll leave you with some conclusions. There is a time sensitivity to this diagnosis. Use the ventilator data along with the rest of it to figure out where you are in that 10 to 12 hour window when you should perhaps identify the patient who needs to be decompressed. The data you use is mode specific. It is not all the same, and it benefits you to dovetail with your respiratory therapist and love them like Dr. Zwischenberger has recommended, so that everyone on the team can recognize all of these changes, and it doesn't have to be just you. It really is a team effort, so that hopefully we can have the sun set on compartment syndrome and mortality that is related to it. Thank you.